Welcome to another edition of your Triple Threat Podcast. Tavari Davis, Jameson Wilson, Jordan Buscarini back here with you for a quick episode today. We've officially reached August, and even though we do have some Olympic basketball to look forward to, I would pretty much consider these the dog days of the NBA summer. Obviously, with teams settling down from most of the offseason talent acquisitions and player movement coming from late June through much of July. We'll share a fun conversation I had with friend of the show, Randy Cruz, of the Cruise Control podcast a bit later. But I really only have one topic to get your thoughts on before we break it down with a little triple threat trivia here in a bit. I was fortunate enough to be asked to participate in a panel piece for @HoopMag, for those of you that are on Twitter, where a bunch of writers and hosts were asked to rank their top 10 NBA seasons for an individual player. This not only took the players' stats into consideration, but you were also able to factor in the team's ultimate success in that particular season as part of your reasoning. I won't go down my entire list, but I will say it probably looked a little bit different than others. For one, and obviously I have everybody that listens to this show knows that I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for what the players did throughout the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But I selected my list from 1979, a.k.a. the modern era of basketball and on. Because not only had the league expanded to include much of the ABA talent by this stage, but the 79-80 season is also when the league added the three-point line, which is widely considered the period where the modern age started, the quote-unquote modern age. So just a few from my list as I'm coming to you guys. I had Jordan 90-91, Magic 86-87, and we're not going to sit here and throw all of their stats out at you. That doesn't necessarily make for great radio. If you want to look it up, let Google be your friend. BasketballReference.com is fantastic. But I also had Jordan 87-88, LeBron's 2012-13, Hakeem's 93-94. This is the one where I know for a fact that probably no one else on the list is going to have. I had Kobe Bryant's 05-06, but then I also had Shaq's 99-2000. All of them made my list for various reasons, but mainly centered around, just utter dominance or sheer greatness. But I wanted to get a few of your greatest seasons ever.
Well, one season that comes to mind is MJ's 87-88 year where he led the league in scoring and also won Defensive Player of the Year. Like, that to me is that's the NBA's version of the Triple Crown, in my opinion, when you're able to, average over 35 points a game and also at the same time win Defensive Player of the Year. That, especially playing a perimeter position such as, the shooting guard or small forward or whatever you want to call it in that time, that's very impressive. To me, that is that's just something that just doesn't happen. You don't really see that happen anymore, being able to be dominant on both ends. That's uber impressive. I know, obviously, we weren't around for Wilt. Obviously, none of us were that old and we weren't around for that. But it's unfortunate that we were not able to include some of his seasons, because when a guy averages 50 a game and also, when a guy plays more than 48 minutes a night, that's very impressive, but obviously we're not able to include anything like that. Also, you mentioned a little bit earlier that Shaq 99-2000 season gets brushed under the rug a lot more than it should. It doesn't get mentioned for whatever reason as much as it should be. That might be that's probably the most dominant season we've ever seen from a big man. We've seen a lot of great bigs in this league during our lifetime. That particular year, in my opinion, was the most dominant season I've ever seen from a player. Just from day one to game 100 after when they beat Pacers in game 6. That season was just total sheer dominance. The numbers, just everything. There was no stopping that guy. You can make the argument that season by that one player was just amazing. And I don't think that can be topped personally.
Yeah, I'm glad you both bring up Shaq's 99-2000 season, because if you just look at the sheer accomplishments that Shaq was able to accumulate that season, I mean, he was a champion, finals MVP, MVP of the league. He was an NBA All-First Team. I believe he was NBA All-Second Defensive Team, if I remember correctly, that year as well, which is something to point out, because Shaq averaged something like 3 blocks a game that year, and he's not really known for being, a really prolific shot blocker. He was fantastic throughout the entire season. Jabari, you mentioned Michael Jordan's 90-91 season. The problem when talking about Michael Jordan and some of the top 10, greatest seasons an individual player has ever had is how many times could we mention Michael Jordan in the top 10? I mean, the guy had several standout. One of the years that I think you definitely have to mention when you talk about the greatest seasons individually a player has ever had was 1987-88 Michael Jordan. He averaged 35 points, mm-hmm. 5 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals. In fact, at that particular time, he recorded 200 steals and 100 blocks for the second straight year. Hakeem and Scottie Pippen were the only two to ever accomplish that at that particular time. So I think it's pretty dynamic to look about, and again, it kind of pushed the Bulls into that new era, you know, where they dominated for, you know, 6 out of the next 9 years as far as NBA championships go. Jordan and the Bulls that year, they also went 50-32, so I think that was a very telling year. One season in particular, you know, you talk about the golden age of the NBA, let's not forget Larry Bird in 85-86. I think you have a legitimate argument mm-hmm. if you say that that Boston Celtic team was the greatest team of all time. They won 67 games that year. Bird averaged something like 25 points and 6 assists a game, but if you look again at the individual accolades that season, he was a champion. He was MVP. He was NBA All-First Team. I believe he also won the three-point contest that year. So, I mean, you look at individual accolades, what they accumulated throughout those particular seasons. Another standout season. Again, it's a team that you have a legit argument. If you say they are the greatest team to ever play, that's Magic Johnson and the 86-87 Lakers. Magic averaged 24 points a game, 6 boards, 12 assists. I mean, think about that for a second. 24 points, 6 boards, 12 assists. NBA champion, finals MVP, and an MVP. I think any time you take an individual player and you look that they won an NBA championship, they were the finals MVP, and they were the MVP, they obviously had to be an NBA All-First Team selection, they obviously had to be an All-Star. I think you can break it down by looking at some of the greatest seasons ever in that regard. I mean, that right there is the pinnacle. If you can win an NBA championship, a finals MVP, an MVP, and get selected to the first team NBA, first All-NBA team, it's hard to top a season like that. You did mention Kobe. Kobe led the Lakers that year. They weren't very good. He had one of the most prolific scoring seasons we've ever seen in league history. But I think you do have to take into consideration what that individual accomplished and what his team accomplished. So based off of that, I think it's really you're hard-pressed to find a better season than what Magic was able to accomplish in 86-87, what Bird was able to accomplish in 85-86. What Jordan accomplished, in 90-91, and then, of course, what Shaq accomplished in 99-2000. Those are the seasons that stand out. And then I think in the back of your mind, you have the Jordan 87-88 and the Kobe 2005, because, again, they didn't lead their team to a title that year.
You know, it's funny. And for the listeners out there, we didn't discuss this before the show, but every single season that you guys just mentioned happened to be on my top 10 list for the exact same reasons. It's almost like it's almost like we're almost an extension of one another when it comes to basketball conversations, and I just appreciate that. I had 85-86 Bird in there, for the exact same reasons that you just listed, and that's why these things are so fun, because you know there's going to be a ton of people that are saying like, oh man, I can't believe you guys disrespected Elgin Baylor and Jerry West and Will Chamberlain and Bill Russell and all of the all-time greats that came. Like I mentioned in the lead-in, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and that's certainly not the case here, but, kind of as Jameson mentioned, many of us didn't get to actually watch those guys play, and while their numbers are incredible and gaudy and, should be honored and absolutely deserve respect and appreciation, for the sake of this, for the sake of this one, we just went from 79 and on, but I just wanted to make that one clear. Who are you guys looking at as current players? Sometimes it's difficult to truly acknowledge greatness when you're seeing it in the moment. Not saying that anyone here has that issue, but who are the current players that you think we're going to be talking about in these exact same conversations 25 years from now?
Well, there's three that come to mind, and they're the three best players in the league right now, however order you want to put them in. LeBron, obviously. With all the seasons he's had, all the numbers, they always favor him. The numbers have always been great for him. Steph Curry, especially the past couple seasons, even this last year, averaging 30 points and, the amount of minutes he did. Usually guys average 30 are playing 38, 40 minutes a night. He's playing like 32, 33 minutes, a night. Getting that, especially with efficiency being preached more and more, that's something that's going to be really, really heavily talked about going forward. And then Kevin Durant, the amount of numbers he's able to put up and the kind of scoring he's been able to put up throughout his career and the way he's able to score now being on a team that they're going to be able to score a lot more easier than he's ever been accustomed to. he's going to put some scoring numbers. He's going to break a lot of those records, the youngest to reach this amount of numbers, the youngest to reach this number, the youngest to reach that number. He's going to surpass a lot of that stuff in his career if he stays healthy, because he's, you know, he's a freak of nature. He's an awesome scorer, but also it's going to be a lot easier. It's going to be a lot of catch-and-shoot open threes, and that's just going to be lights out. But also another guy I failed to mention is Russell Westbrook. If healthy, he's going to have some crazy, 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 crazy type numbers where he's going to be one of the only players with like 25,000 points, maybe like 7,000 or 7,000 rebounds and like over 7,000 assists and a bunch of steals. And while he's gonna have that weird where maybe one of two or three players ever have those kind of numbers. So I think those four guys are the guys that we're going to take back a look at 20 years from now. Like, damn, those guys were really did some amazing things. Health permitting, of course, because all those guys have, you know, either health issues or their miles are adding up. So hopefully health stays on the side of them, because other than that, those guys are amazing.
Hey, Jordan, you know, not to have you reiterate all of those same guys, but I'll ask you, can guys like Cat Towns and Anthony Davis also join that same mix?
I think Anthony Davis can. Karl Anthony Towns, it's still way too early to tell. I mean, he put up an historical rookie season, something that we haven't actually seen in the NBA since Shaq. So, I mean, he definitely has the intangibles. I think he has the ingredients to do it. Still way too early to tell, and I think it's unfair to put those sort of expectations on a guy going into a second season. But I think Anthony Davis definitely can. He's got to stay healthy. I think it is important that New Orleans puts something around Anthony Davis. We got a glimpse to get that game against at the end of this past season. And again, a lot of people, myself included, predicted that Anthony Davis would win the MVP this past year when Steph Curry gave one of the most historical seasons that we have ever seen, becoming the first unanimous MVP selection. You know, so when you look at current guys, yeah, I mean, there's some rookies that I think are coming up. It's unfair to place those expectations. Right now, this era to me is still, it's still LeBron James, who has put together some terrific, speaking of terrific seasons, we can't forget his first championship. I know it was a 66-game season, but in 2011-2012 with the Heat, that was absolutely historical. I think LeBron shot like 54% from the field that year. It's still that era. Steph Curry is going to dominate this era for the foreseeable future as well. I think you're going to see some really historical things from him. Same with Russell Westbrook. On guys coming up, man, it's just, it really is too early to tell. But the man at the front of the line has to be Anthony Davis, just based off what we've been able to see. That guy, to me, has all the intangibles of becoming a prolific MVP candidate year after year. I think a lot of that has to do, though, with New Orleans' front office. You have to make sure you put this guy in a position to shine. And the same thing will go for Karl Anthony Towns. We look at Minnesota right now, and they're set up so beautifully. And you have a guy like Tom Thibodeau. Everybody loves it right now. All right, let's make sure that management continues to keep Minnesota on the on this path, because again, we just mentioned all these historical seasons. All the seasons that we just mentioned, one thing stands out. Outside of that Kobe 2005 season, every other player had another All-Star with them. Keep that in mind.
Well, that when it comes to Anthony Davis, there's a couple of things that I have caution about with him. One is his health. He's having problems already staying on the court and playing full seasons, and that's an issue within itself. Now, whether he gets stronger, whether that changes in the future, that's something that remains to be seen. Another thing is, like you just mentioned, you bring up a very good point. All of the teams had another All-Star. I don't know if the Pelicans front office and management is equipped enough to make that happen, because it seems like, from what I'm looking at, they have a lot of bad contracts on that roster, and they're not getting any better anytime soon. Like, they don't have, this guy's going to be really good. Like, I don't see the kind of roster that can, make Anthony Davis be that special. Yes, we saw him score like 59 earlier this year. Like, he had a great game, and he's damn really good. But when it comes down to it, I got to see him stay healthy. I'm more worried about that, because the way his body is and the way his shoulders are, I worry a bit, because I don't know if that's going to be a problem, especially if they're asking him to do a little bit of everything. I don't know if his body can hold up. But if his body can, yes, if his body can't, I think Karl Anthony Towns is the guy, because his body is more sturdier from the build of it, and also he has way better talent around him.
Yeah, to Jordan's point from earlier, it might be a little bit early to have these conversations about Cat, but that just proves how great of a season he had as a rookie that we're even mentioning him in these conversations. Okay, so let's go ahead and run that conversation with Randy Cruz once again of the Cruz Control Podcast before coming back and wrapping it up with a round of Triple Threat NBA trivia. We're joined by the host of the Cruise Control Podcast and an all-around, I'd just say, NBA head, Randy Cruz, on the Triple Threat here today, and we appreciate your time today.
Jabari, what's up, my man? How you doing?
Man, I'm good. It's always good to catch up with you, you know, talking a little NBA. It's been kind of a wild and crazy offseason. I've got folks moving around. You got all types of, you know, fun storylines with, you know, from the draft to free agency. Obviously, you know, summer league for those of our teams or markets that are, you know, that put a lot of emphasis on the summer league team. You got Olympic basketball coming up. You know, you got your boy Draymond, you know, dropping hammer picks. You know, this summer it's had everything. But let's go ahead and actually jump right into it and start with your Knicks, if you don't mind. Because I'm actually one of those individuals that appreciate what they've done this offseason. But I want to ask you, how are you feeling about the additions of Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Courtney Lee, Brandon Jennings, you know, and the like? And where do you think it has placed your Knicks in what is suddenly looking like a more competitive conference than it has been in some years?
Well, Jabari, to be honest, I know me and you have spoken about this on my show a couple of times. And, you know, me being a Knicks fan at the same time, you know, I'm also a realist. And I tell you when my team is not doing good or when they are doing good. And with the moves that they made with Rose and Jennings and Noah and Courtney Lee, I like it. I wouldn't understand how a Knicks fan would not like it. Here on this side of the East Coast, a lot of fans did not want Jose Calderon to be their starting point guard no longer. They felt he was more of a backup point guard. And, you know, I felt the same way. And lo and behold, he's involved in a trade for a former MVP, former multiple-time All-Star. And, you know, we can all sit here and say with Derrick Rose, you know, if he's healthy, I totally, you know, get that. But at the same time, you traded Robin Lopez, Jose Calderon, and Jerrion Grant for Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose is still in his 20s, still very young. Had a pretty good, decent season last year with Chicago, played in majority of the games, and now he comes to New York. I think, one, he's going to come rejuvenated. Maybe he felt Chicago gave up on him entirely or too quickly. And maybe this is going to be a fresh start for him in New York. Now, I know he still has 1 year left on the contract. Him going further with New York after the season, I have no idea. But I think I think it's beneficial for both Derrick Rose and New York, because Derrick Rose gets to rejuvenate his career. At the same time, the Knicks gets to bring back the buzz back to Madison Square Garden and a potential playoff berth, which we haven't seen since 2013 against the Pacers in the second round. So adding him, adding Joakim Noah, adding Courtney Lee and Brandon Jennings, you're getting four guys that can score, that can hustle, rebound, block shots. And again, Jennings is also a guy on a one-year deal. So we're not locked with these guys long-term except Joakim Noah and Courtney Lee. The point guard spot is going to be very crucial and vital for the Knicks, which has been the case for several years with the team. So getting Jennings and Rose for 1 year on a trial basis, let's see how they are, because we know next year in the free agency, players like Curry and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook are going to be out there as free agents. So I'm good with the moves they made. The buzz is already coming back here to MSG, and then you add those guys with Melo, a still rising star with Porzingis. I think they are a playoff team, but I mean, on paper, we still got to play the game to see how everything plays out. But if they remain healthy, I'm not saying, you know, conference finals or finals, but I think they can compete in the East, at least make it to the second round.
Which, obviously, as you just mentioned, you know, having not made it to the playoffs since 2013, kind of to your point that you led in with, I can't see why any Knicks fan, would be disappointed in that, or at least where it appears that they're heading. Well, again, last thing on them, did any of the super team talk bother you? And I ask that because I know there were some folks that questioned Rose, you know, when he made that comment. And while I found it funny that he left the defending champion Cavs off his list of super teams, you know, quote unquote super teams, I can't necessarily, you know, and even though I don't necessarily agree with the idea in general, I can't necessarily fault him for being confident in his new surroundings.
I mean, yeah, I love the confidence. I'm pretty sure Knicks fans would appreciate that. But at the same time, Jabari, this new Knicks team has not played one game, so I can't really call them a super team or a team that must be played in 2K17 all day every day. I have to see them on the floor, and it's like I told you before, it's good on paper when you see all the the entire lineup, and it's like, how is Jeff Hornacek gonna make sure everybody gets time, get touches? Derrick Rose is not your typical pass first point guard. He's more of a shooting first point guard. So with Melo, getting KP the right touches, giving Porzingis more playing time in the fourth quarter when the games are closed. So all that has to play, be put into effect, because Jeff Hornacek is on his first year with the Knicks. And I know he's been doing a lot of point guard play when he was coaching in Phoenix with Bledsoe and Dragic and Isaiah Thomas. So now he has Jennings and Derrick Rose to fulfill that void. So, I mean, questions are still in the air. It's only August, but at least for now, the Knicks fan base already have something to look forward to coming in, into this year. Last year was different. They drafted Porzingis. We had no idea what was going to happen with him. And a year later, everybody is a Porzingis fan. So now with the roster we have, it could be a playoff potential team. I don't think it's a super team. It's not the Cavaliers. They still got to compete with the likes of Toronto, even the Indiana Pacers. They bolstered their roster up like crazy. Boston Celtics, the same thing. So I think it's going to be a fight for the playoffs. Maybe some teams that made it last year may not make it, like Miami. We don't know about Chicago with D-Wade going over there. So I just feel confident that at least the Knicks are in the conversation to be in the top eight. And would you got to see where they fall in the first four or in the bottom four?
And you know what? You gave me a perfect segue. Tell me about why the Chicago experiment with Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, and Rajon Rondo will or won't work for the Bulls this season.
I don't know. A lot of it has to do with Hoiberg too, because when Tibbs left, majority of the defense left too. So they became a more offensive oriented team. We know Rondo, he's a great player, but sometimes he gets into his act. And now it's basically Butler's team. D-Wade said it many times in the press conference that I'm just here just to help Butler and Rondo. This is Jimmy's team. So now, would it be too much pressure on Jimmy Butler to carry the Bulls now that there's no Noah, there's no Derrick Rose? He's the long, him and Taj Gibson are probably the longest reigning Bulls players on that roster. Fred Hoiberg did a okay job, but maybe a disappointing season with the Bulls last year. So the backcourt sounds great, but it's just how they're going to make up for the front court and get the defense back on track. Can they make the playoffs? I mean, on paper, on Jabari, they can. It is still the Eastern Conference. So I like D-Wade going over there. It's something new, something different for him, and something different for the fans and the media to see how D-Wade gets acclimated in Chicago. I doubt anything would be butting heads or not meshing with Rondo or Butler. It's going to be very interesting television, and I just can't wait to see what they do.
All right, I'm going to ask you to do a bit of forecasting. We're going to put your genie's hat on right quick.
All right.
We're ahead about 5 months. Say we're approaching February. What's more likely, that we start hearing trade rumors involving one or more than one of those three, or we start hearing Fred Hoiberg being on the hot seat?
I would think Hoiberg, man. You're bringing a guy like Rondo from Sacramento. He's now your starting point guard. It's not like you have any other options besides him. I have no idea who's their backup point guard. D-Wade, you're not trading D-Wade. That's right out the back.
Yeah.
They were trying to get rid of Jimmy Butler. I don't know how much, but during the NBA draft, we heard Boston was in the mix, or Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Tom Thibodeau, Marcus Butler in Minnesota with him. So, it could be even. It could be really even, depending on how they do. Either Fred Hoiberg got to go, or they say, you know what, Jimmy Butler, we're going to trade you and get some younger guys. And I would not want them to trade Jimmy Butler, but I think if anything, Fred Hoiberg would be the one that has to go in the event they're not doing well by the trade deadline.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. If I'm them, I'm not looking to trade Jimmy Butler. I think when you kind of made the decision between Rose and him, you know, that was for more than just like another 3 months. So I tend to agree. I know I put you on the spot with that one, but I appreciate you playing along. All right, as we both agreed earlier, it looks like the Eastern Conference is at least looking a bit better, at least slightly more balanced, than it has in recent years. So which of those emerging teams do you see as possible contenders to at least challenge the aforementioned defending champs along, at least in a playoff run?
I think the teams that can really give Cleveland a scare would I like Toronto, but I just don't think they really matched up well with Cleveland in the conference finals. I know they won two games, but it just seemed Cleveland just overmatched them. But I think to me, the Indiana Pacers and I would say the Boston Celtics. And I know Boston, the names may not shout at you like, oh, wow, superstar, but you bring in Al Horford, a guy that can give you a double-double, a multiple-time all-star, and you have an all-star point guard who really shocked the whole league by the way he was playing last year and brought Boston to, I think, a fifth seed. So if Boston can be a fifth seed last year without Al Horford and the Hawks were four with Horford, just imagine – Al coming to the Celtics and really at least making it a top three team. The Pacers, Jabari, they still got Paul George. They added Thaddeus Young from Brooklyn. They added Jeff Teague from Atlanta. They added Al Jefferson from Charlotte. And I know they have the other players. Yeah, and it's like, my God, they really did the biggest upgrade, I think, to me, comes to the Eastern Conference. And when you put that team against the Cavaliers, who did not add anybody, they lost Mozgov and Dellavedova, but they didn't add anybody. Mm-hmm. So the Pacers are looking like, well, okay, if y'all are gonna stay the same, we're gonna keep building our roster. And to me, I mean, the Pacers only they lost Game 7 against Toronto in the first round last year. Now you add Jefferson, Teague, and Thaddeus Young to that mix. I mean, it could be a real different story. Not saying they make the NBA Finals, but that could be the one team that can scare the Cavaliers.
And you kind of took it where I was going to take it, to wrap up the Eastern Conference. Who's going to be the best of the rest? Because we can both agree the Cavs are still the best team, in the Eastern Conference, especially even with the losses and not necessarily doing much to add to their roster. We agree on that point, right?
Yeah. Jabari, I think we're going to have the Cavaliers and Warriors all over again. And just for the 30 in a row, it's like, hey, man, we're going to play these games. And, hey, you know what? It's still Cavaliers and Warriors.
Yeah, you're probably right. But you know what? Before we get there, let's swing it out west for a few minutes. Here, with KD electing to go to Golden State, we talked about this. We talked about it on your show, once again, the Cruise Control Podcast. For those out there, make sure you tune into that. Make sure you check, Randy out on Twitter. We're going to get all of his information a bit later on. But, yeah, we've talked about this. But I actually want to start with his old stomping grounds in OKC. What's your gut instinct when it comes to the whole Westbrook conundrum and whether they ultimately move him before the trade deadline?
Well, it's funny that I had a show last week and, I asked my guests the same thing. What's the best fit for Russell Westbrook? Should he stay? Should he go? And if he goes, where should he go? Because, Westbrook is a fashion guy. He can go to L.A. Mm-hmm. He can go to New York. Because they'll have the cap space next season, or should he be like, if Durant's gonna leave my team, leave Oklahoma City, I'm gonna, take that burden and I'm gonna prove to the world and prove to people around the NBA that I can carry a franchise on my own and really take that responsibility and say, OKC Thunder is mine, it's under my my time, my leadership, and they still have a good roster. You know, they
mm-hmm.
had Oladipo in the summertime. They have Cantor and Adams and all those guys. So it's not like they lose Durant and they're going to be out of the playoffs. I think they can still make the playoffs in the Western Conference. And I think Russell Westbrook, with his drive, his attitude, his heart and desire. Even Kobe Bryant said, if there was someone that was like me, you know, going
mm-hmm.
on the court and had that fire, it's Russell Westbrook. So Westbrook may look at that as a challenge, at least for this year, and say, you know what, I'm going to prove to the people out there that I can carry this. Now, his future going forward, that is really up in the air. I know Boston wanted him. There was talks about adding Blake Griffin to that roster, but I don't know how that would work. Who would they give up? I know he'll have options. I don't think he'll commit to anything, you know, during the year. Would he be traded before the season starts? It's possible if OKC really feels like he's not going to stay. You can't lose Durant and Westbrook and not get anything out of them. That'll totally dismantle the franchise, you know, for a year. But Russell might feel like, you know what, this team drafted me. I'm gonna commit here long term, and I want to prove to people that I can run and you know, a franchise on my own and be the superstar that I know I can be. And Jabari, I just can't wait for when OKC and the Warriors play, either in or Golden State. It's going to be so crazy. But then again, you know, that's why we watch the NBA.
Can we get it Christmas morning? Can we get it Christmas Day? Just let everybody should enjoy that. You know, should be able to enjoy that matchup. I want Durant's first time back to OKC on Christmas Day.
You know what? I would want that too, but they always put the finals rematch on Christmas, so you might get that a little later. You might get that like February.
That's true. All right. Obviously, you know, injuries and player availability could ultimately determine the hierarchy, you know, out west. But which of the teams do you expect to win the race, I guess, for the title of second or third best teams in the conference? I ask because a lot of people might assume the Spurs would naturally, you know, be the best of the rest. But could you see a team like the Clippers finally push past their, well, I guess I'll call it a second-round glass ceiling in order to at least compete for a conference final this year?
I don't know, man. I like watching the Clippers, and I just feel like they disappoint fans around the world. That, like, you're right there. Like, 2 years ago, they had Houston up 3-1 and ready to go to the conference finals, and you know, watch a Warriors Clippers conference finals, and they ultimately lose in seven games. And then last year, you know, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both get hurt in the same game in the playoffs, and it's just like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. Like, Chris Paul has to get out the second round. I know he's thinking about that, but if there's one team that can really say that can knock on the Warriors' door and be like, hey, you know, we're still here. I mean, outside of San Antonio, oh boy. I like Portland. They made some.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they kept a lot of players. No Houston Rockets. Memphis, not really.
What about what Utah's done? I'm not saying Utah's a contender, but they look like they're game ready in terms of being a playoff team.
Yeah, they've been knocking on that door for two straight years, and they missed the playoffs by like one game. So if a team can, that's, you know, I would see them more than, like, the Pelicans, because the Pelicans fell off last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got hurt and everything. So even, you know, not saying on the Warriors level, but even a team like Minnesota can knock on the door for the playoffs. But all those additions, that young roster and adding Thibodeau. But to answer your question, man, I think it's – if it ain't Golden State, it's San Antonio. I can't count out OKC either. I'm really interested in seeing totally take over that team and just post up triple doubles every night. And he might just do that every single night. And like I said, they don't have Durant, but that doesn't mean they go from the second seed to, like, the eighth seed. To me, I just don't see that. They can still win games. And you never know, Jabbar. They might make a move during the trade deadline that can propel them to at least conference final status. Sam Presti, he's smart GM. He knows what he's doing. So, you know, if he knows Westbrook has any inclination of staying, he's going to do everything he can to build that roster up and say, Westbrook, this is your team now. Look at the talent you have. And I think you can take this team far. But right now, Golden State still has the edge. And they have the edge, but they're not the same team. And, you know, them losing five, six guys, but you get Durant, the Zaza Pachulia, David West, and then JaVale McGee. But you lose Bogut, Barnes, Barbosa, Spates. You know, that added depth to your roster. And, yes, you do get Kevin Durant, but does that hurt you in the long run where a lot of your points and a lot of everything is going to be relied on four guys? And, you know, I know Miami was in the same situation years ago with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, but it took them a whole year to get acclimated. They didn't win the first year, but a lot of pressure is going to be on Durant to win. As a KD fan, I would love to see him win a championship, and I think this has to be the year for him to do so.
He is Randy Cruz of the Cruise Control Podcast. Randy, before we get you out of here, and I have one more NBA related question for you, but I actually want to give you a second. Can you tell the folks about this Hoops from the Sun tournament that you and your brother run? It looks like an incredible project, and I know you've been at it for a long time. Tell the folks about that if you don't mind.
Well, my brother Joe and I, we run the Hoops in the Sun Basketball Summer League at Orchard Beach in the Bronx. It's the only tournament on a beachside venue in New York City, and maybe the entire East Coast. We've been doing it. We started in 2000, so this season makes season
nice.
17. My dad, long story short, my dad had a vision. He was visiting Venice Beach one day on a business trip, and he just saw people playing basketball on the beach, having a good time, the water and the sand, everything. He came back home and just said, I want to do a basketball tournament at Orchard Beach, which is his favorite hangout when I was younger. And lo and behold, he got some sponsors, he got the Parks Department on board, and it's been going ever since. My dad passed away back in 2004, so my brother and I have been running everything for the past 12, 13 years. It's a great tournament, great competition, NCAA and NBA sanctioned. We get the opportunity to have some of the best high school players and college and even NBA players perform out there. Great, safe environment. We are actually having our playoffs and championship this weekend, so we're wrapping
nice.
That up this weekend. But the sky's the limit. Next year should be bigger and better. And for those who have never heard of it, they can always go to hoopsinthesun.net or follow us on the gram and Twitter and Facebook, all at Hoops in the Sun. Get some information. The age groups are from 10 years old all the way to adult. So kids and girls can play in there. So it's been very high profile for the last couple of years, been on TV, magazines, newspapers, ESPN radio, and stuff like that. So it can only get bigger and better for year 18 next year. Hopefully, whenever you're in the city and you want to stop by during the summertime, I know your schedule is kind of hectic, but if you're ever around from June to August for a weekend, come check it out. If not, I'm pretty sure you'll be hearing about it on social media.
No, without a doubt, if I'm ever in the city, I can absolutely guarantee I'll be there to check it out. Like I said, I know we didn't talk about you discussing that on the show. I just wanted you to be able to mention it because, from a distance, it looks like an awesome project. It seems like you got some good basketball out there, a lot of good folks, and, obviously, it's great that you guys are able to continue on your father's vision and dream, and it's just a beautiful thing to see. All right, so I'll get you out of here on this one. And, again, I truly appreciate you taking the time to join this week's Triple Threat, Randy. But with the recent Duncan retirement and obviously coming on the heels of Kobe Bryant's departure from the game and, to a lesser degree, even the Amari announcement from last week, does part of you feel like your basketball childhood is officially over? Or are you still holding out hope for, I guess, some sort of resurgence out of, Kevin Garnett or your Vince Carter?
Man, Jabbar, for me, once Michael Jordan retired, man, that took a big hit. That was the childhood. Then he started, you know, gradually seeing Shaq, and that was Kobe and Duncan. And you just know Garnett's coming up, Paul Pierce is coming up. Vince Carter, even when T-Mac, AI retired, Jason Kidd, like that was it for me. But it just goes to show you that, you know, you had the privilege to see a person's entire career right in front of your eyes, live on TV. You might have seen a couple games live in person in the arena, and just, you know, you witnessing their greatness and what they put forth to the game of basketball. And just seeing, like you say, even to a lesser degree, Amari. Like, I was a big Amari fan in Phoenix, and him standing tall and talented, him coming to the Knicks and, you know, bringing that resurgence to MSG. And, you know, ultimately the injuries caught up to him, and Father Tom caught up to Shaq and Kobe and those guys. But, you know, sometimes some people don't get to see the entire career of a great player. Like, I didn't see Magic's whole career. I was still young. I didn't see Bird's entire career. I saw Michael's entire career, and I'm just grateful to have seen that in many different eras. The ESPN ABC era now, from before the NBC era. Time has changed. Everything is evolving with basketball and sports. So I'm sad that mostly Kobe retiring. It's like you really sit back and be like, damn, man, like, like 20 years. I saw Kobe's 20-year career. Like, then you're like, man, I'm getting old. Like, I saw Kobe's 20-year career. I saw Duncan's whole 19-year career. And Garnett's coming up, and these guys, and it's like, you know, just want to see them still be involved somehow, whether it's commentating or coaching, something like that, just to see these guys get involved, because sometimes guys retire or just leave and you have no idea what's going on. So I'm pretty sure Kobe will be around on TV. Duncan, I don't know. He just probably just, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. Amari, I think he's going to be playing overseas. So, it's great seeing these guys, Hall of Famers, bar none. So now we're stuck with the Currys and the Durants and LeBrons and D Wade's, which is good. And, you know, once they retire, then it's like, man, I don't know.
Yeah. we better push the clock forward on, you know, Anthony Davis and, you know, Cat Towns. You know, all those guys are going to have to really step up. Really, really step up.
No, I said basically, man, like, if these young guys, 20-year-old guys are already 10-year vets, you know, we got to press pause and time out on time, man.
For real. All right, Randy, absolutely fantastic stuff. Again, I appreciate you taking the time, you know, to join this week. Can you let the folks know where, I know you've given some of the information, but, you know, run it down like a Soul Train, you know, thank you list once again for the folks out there.
All right, man, first of all, always appreciate the invite and opportunity to come on the show. I know me and you chop it up about NBA throughout the season, so I'm pretty sure I'll be on again and you'll be on mine again. But The Cruise Control podcast, people can find it on SoundCloud.com and also on iTunes. They can subscribe and download. There's no set dates that I do it. I just, whenever I have a guest or whenever a big topic comes up, I just go on. So they can follow me on Twitter at Randy J. Cruz. That's the letter J in between the name. And just, you know, I'll keep you guys updated on when the shows are coming up. I had two shows last week, so you can backtrack on that, and should be new ones coming soon as the NBA comes up and stuff like that. So again, Cruise Control Podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, and I'm on Twitter at Randy J. Cruz.
All right, that was Randy Cruz. Stick with us here on the Triple Threat. Always great stuff with Randy Cruz. Be sure to follow him on Twitter and support his projects if you like what you've heard. All right, gentlemen, before we get out of here today, how about some Triple Threat trivia? The rules will be simple. I'll go back and forth with some general NBA trivia. You'll have about 5 seconds to answer because we're not going to have people sitting here for 30 seconds while we're waiting. And if you can't come up with it, the other guy can steal it and still get their turn. We'll run through a few. We'll run through them relatively quickly in order to get a few of them in. So are you guys ready?
Sure.
Yep, let's do it.
All right. All right, Jameson, let's go first. I am a retired NBA player that scored double figures in 787 straight games between 1977 and 1987.
Oh, man, that's a good one. 77, 87?
Mm-hmm. Let me know if you need it. I'll give one hint per question, so let me know if you need it.
Yeah, I need a hint.
I was a big.
Man, that's a really good question. Bernard King?
Nope. Jordan, you want to steal it?
Go ahead and give me the logistics of that one more time.
All right. I am a retired NBA player that scored double figures in 787 straight games between 1977 and 1987. And I was a big man. No, I said the thing with NBA trivia is it's either really easy or really tough. I thought this might be an easy one, but we'll see.
What year did he retire?
Oh, I didn't say that.
I'm just going to say Moses Malone.
No, but it was another great big that you guys might kick yourselves for, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay. All right, I see where you're going here. All right, go ahead.
Yep, I got you. All right, Jordan, you're up now. You're up first. What team plays their home games at? I got you. What team plays their home games at 4 Pennsylvania Plaza?
Team plays their home games in Pennsylvania?
No, the address is 4 Pennsylvania Plaza, and I can give a hint if you need.
Yeah, go ahead and give me a hint. Why not? You always take a hint when you can get it.
Exactly. All right, let me see. What won't give it away?
Knicks.
Yeah. I figured that might give it. I figured
Look,
that
I,
might
in
give
all
it.
Fairness,
all right.
I knew it was the New York Knicks before. I just wanted a hit, just to make sure.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. For the people in the back. All right, so here's an easy one. Jameson, my NBA nickname that I'm most popularly known by is The Worm.
Dennis Rodman.
There it is. All right, Jordan, you're up. I was an 11-time All-Star, 3-time MVP, 3-time Finals MVP, and led the league in assists 3 times. This might be tricky.
11-time All-Star, 3-time MVP, led the league in assists 3 times, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, man, this is one of those things where you got to really think because it can be tricky. I'm All-Star.
Need a hint?
And I'm almost certain I know this, but go ahead, give me a hint. I'm almost certain I know it. Now, I don't need a hint. It's magic.
Yes, it is. And the hint was going to be I played in the finals 9 times, so I was like, they're going to get this for sure.
Want to make sure. I knew it was magic.
All right, I got you. Unfortunately, he didn't win 4 MVPs because it would have made it a more difficult one because I thought you guys might have thought it was LeBron. That's why I actually used it. All right, Jameson, you're up. Which award do you win? Which award do you have to win in order to collect the Eddie Gottlieb Trophy? This is a tough one, I'll admit.
Man.
Yeah, I know.
I need a hint for this one.
All right, so this individual was also called, he had 2 nicknames that he was most popularly known for. He was called The Mogul, Mr. Basketball, and he also happened to be the coach of the Philadelphia Warriors from 1951 through 1962. The Eddie Gottlieb Award, or trophy.
The coach of the year?
He goes to the rookie of the year. And I didn't give Jordan an opportunity to steal it. My bad. All right, Jordan, here's another one for you. And this one could be tough as well. When I retired, I played in more games than any other player, had won three and excuse me, and won three games or rings while doing it. I also scored over 23,000 points and grabbed over 14,000 rebounds over my career.
How many points did he score?
Over 23,000 and grabbed over 14,000 rebounds.
I'm trying to think of I'm trying to think of those guys in the rebound category right now, because there's a grip of players scored between 22 and 23,000 points. I'm going to guess Charles Barkley.
That was a good guess, but that wasn't it. I actually took one of his out. Jameson,
okay.
You want to throw a shot at it?
I need a hit, please.
See, this is the trouble is the hints, they give them away. The Chief.
Oh, Robert Pierce.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't know that about Robert Pierce. I knew he played 21 seasons. I didn't know he played more games than any other player and put up quite the numbers that he did. You know, obviously an all-time great, you know, played with those, had his most success with those Boston Celtics teams throughout the 80s. And someone that kind of goes unrecognized when we're talking about, you know, some of the great bigs over the last 30, 40 years. All right, that last one, Jameson, you were on the steal, so you still get your opportunity. I was the first player to record back-to-back 50-point games in the 2000s.
Man, this is I remember...
You know this one.
Game that I do. I do. Just want to make sure. Let me get a hint.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of a better hint that's not going to do.
I remember the game it happened, but I just want to make sure I'm not overthinking this.
I also scored over 20,000 points in my NBA career. So just to reset. I was the first player to record back-to-back 50-point games in the 2000s, and I scored over 20,000 points in my NBA career.
And that's a good one, because it's one of two players. It's one of two players, and I don't want to overthink this, because I remember the game where both players scored 50, and I remember the situation. Man, that's a good one. That is a good one. I'm going to go with, man, it's tough, but, you know, I'm going with Antoine Jameson.
It is Antoine Jameson. Because the game that you're referencing was the second of his 50-point games, and Kobe Bryant also played that game and scored 50 points in the same game. But the first player
right,
scored
back-to-back
50
thinking,
points.
Oh, yeah. Two. That's why I remember that game.
Yeah, that's exactly why I put that one in there. All right, Jordan, let's get through one more for each of you guys. So, Jordan, this is easy. Hold on. All right, I'll put it out there because some of the listeners may not know. I was selected number two in the 1984 NBA draft, just ahead of Michael Jordan and after Hakeem Olajuwon.
Selected number two in the 1984 NBA draft?
Mm-hmm.
That's Sam Bowie.
Yes, it is. All right, last one here for Jameson. I was the league's first ever lottery pick in 1985.
Ah, man, 1985 with the frozen envelope.
Yes,
Patrick Ewing.
Absolutely. All right, I lied, so I do have another couple. Jordan, what was the first name of the NBA?
The first name of the NBA. Like the name of the association?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good one. I got to be honest with you. I got to be 100% honest with you. I can say I don't know. I mean, the NBA was founded 70 years ago. We're going on 70 years, right? I don't know. The BAA?
Yes. Wait a second. Hold on. I have no idea, but I just pulled BAA out of my – that I mean, I guess it makes sense that it you want to throw a shout out what it stands for, what the acronym stands for?
There was yeah, it's the Basketball Association of America. It's either the BAA or it could have been the NBL. There's a couple of other like acronyms out there that it could have been, but BAA, yeah, why not? That was a complete guess,
right,
by the way, too.
Hey, but you got it. All right, Jameson, you're going to finish it all. You're going to finish the clock. Three players won the NBA's rebounding title from 1989 through 1998. Name them.
Man, that's a good one. 101 Dennis. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's a really good question. Rebounding title, huh? Man, that's a really good question. I need a hint, please.
All three were bigs. And I know that's not the best, you know, the greatest of things.
Well, I mean,
all three were
bigs,
and the other. Well, you know what I mean, you know. I'll say 6'8" and above. the other two were bigs, legit bigs.
Understandable. All right. Man, that's a good one.
And the other two had a decent little rivalry as well.
Oh, man, that's a really good one. I'm going to take a guess here and say Akeem and Dikembe are the other two.
You got one of them. Jordan, you want to take a stab at it before I give them?
Yeah, so Rodman won it 7 consecutive years. I'm trying to think on the bookends of those. One of them was Akeem. The other one has to be either David Robinson or Chris Webber. What year did you say?
I did not say what year. It was okay, I'll get 91. That should give it.
Yeah, Rodman won it 7 consecutive years. So I'm going to say Rodman, Robinson, and Akeem.
There it is. All right, so Akeem won in 89 and 90. David Robinson won in 91. And Dennis Rodman just closed the show from 92 to 98.
Yeah,
absolutely,
but Chris, now, this is the thing. Chris Webber won it a year in between there, and that's the thing that was – like, when did Chris Webber win that? Because it was in that time frame.
That's a good question. Hold on. I mean, hey, I got all of these from from the Googler. Maybe it's inaccurate. Let me see. Chris – Webber.
He was in a time frame in the 90s. He snuck in and won the rebound title.
Let's see. I'm going through the list right now. This makes for good radio. Yeah. But no,
you can edit out a lot of things. When I said Charles Barkley, I completely spaced that you said that played more games than anyone ever. Of course, that wasn't Barkley.
Yeah. No, I'm going to edit all of this out. All right, so it looks, Chris Webber won in 98-99. Those three won for that solid 9 years.
I was thinking he won it in between. He did win it in the 90s, though. I just could not remember where he won it.
And to Jameson's credit, Dikembe, whom you mentioned earlier, he actually won it in 99-2000 as well as in 2000-2001.
Okay.
Like four guys, and then after that, I'm sure it's probably Ben Wallace after that, right? Ben Wallace won it a couple of years in a row.
4 years in a row, 3 or 4 years in a row, I think.
No. Ben Wallace only won 2 years in a row. Then Kevin Garnett took it over. But remember, Ben Wallace was winning rebounding titles as well as defensive player of the year. So, Ben Wallace was nasty for that 4 year stretch. He was real nasty with the Pistons. All right, guys, that was a lot of fun. I know we don't do, trivia very often. It's something that, we'll try to work in at least every so often, or at least another time or two, over the course of the summer. We'll obviously be talking all types of Olympic basketball, on next week's episode and probably the one following. But before we get out of here, let me get a final shot from each of you.
All right, my final shot is this, man. Watching Draymond Green over the last few months, even before the playoffs started, one thing has come to mind. Even on the court, even before the midsection stuff, he's the Golden State Warriors version of Dennis Rodman. You can say Steph is Mike and Clay is whoever, however you want to call it. But one thing for certain is that Draymond Green is their Dennis Rodman, their version of Dennis Rodman. It's a good thing and also a bad thing. It's a good thing because he can defend and do a lot of great things on the court. Obviously, he's a much better offensive player than Dennis ever was. And he's very unique. His skill set's very unique. Those don't grow on trees. You know, those kind of players, you can't just go draft another Draymond. It doesn't work that way. But off the court, this guy's kind of crazy. Like, this guy, I mean, even before the playoffs, he was Snapchatting himself going 118 miles per hour at night at like 3 a.m. driving, which was bad. And then, of course, all stuff that happened in the playoffs with the midsection attacking and then, you know, getting suspended in the finals and then, you know, then all the stuff, you know, the slapping of the football player and that football player getting, you know, getting forced out of school and then the Snapchat incident and then all the, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. Well, I'm not saying he's, you know, Dennis with other stuff, but he is their version of Dennis Rodman. It's very interesting. I know guys have to have that edge and that guys have to be a certain way, but it's bordering on out of control because remember in that regular season game at Oklahoma City where they came back and won on, you know, they step hit the big three, and during halftime of that game, if I'm not mistaken, that was a game where Draymond was cussing everybody out at halftime, cussing the coaching staff out and everything like that. If boys aren't out of control, it's going to be very interesting to see how that if they can contain them a bit because it seems like there's no one or nothing that can control him, not if it's Tom Izzo, not his mama, not nobody. So I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm fascinated as hell to watch because you know what? This seems like it could be a train wreck or it could be a success story. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, my man, Mr. Hammerpick, look. It can come at a cost when you play, you know, on the edge like that. You know, Draymond's one of my favorite players right now, to be honest with you, but I have the exact same reservations that you hold. I certainly appreciate the ferocity he plays with. I certainly appreciate the edge that he plays with. I certainly appreciate that, you know, he's their guy. You know what I mean? Like, Steph, Steph or Durant, they're the best players. Clay is incredible. But the heart and soul of that locker room still remains, or still at least appears to be Dre. And, you only hope that he can hold it together enough to be a part of something that could truly be special moving forward. But like you said, I hold those same reservations. And you just don't want to see him go too far with things, you know, whether it's on the court or off. All right, Jordan, let me get yours.
Yeah, I talked about this on my show actually last week, and I'm going to go back to it. There was Coach Krzyzewski had to come out and actually say that he was less than pleased with the antics of the USA basketball team during a game against China when they were up by like 50 points, and you know, we had Kevin Durant pick up a technical, I believe, for, you know, some excessive celebration on the bench, and then you had DeMar DeRozan who missed a 360 dunk. And, you know, I hope that those antics, I hope it's finished. I hope they're gone now that we get set to actually begin the Olympic Games because, again, I know it's a new team. I know that these are professional athletes, and a lot of people would say, hey, they have to go, and they have to have fun. Yet at the same time, USA is the pinnacle for basketball. We are the country that set the tone. We you know, everybody out – look, there are coaches that come over here to JUCOs that I've worked very closely with and that come over to become assistants on college basketball teams because it is that prestigious to say that you coached in the United States of America for, you know, a college or some sort of a professional team basketball-wise. You leave this country, you can get a job anywhere you want outside of the U.S. once you do that. We set the tone. We also need to make sure that these players, they have to conduct themselves in a manner that shows professionalism that's good for the game of basketball. And a lot of people would say that I come across sounding like old man basketball, but look, it is what it is. Team USA is supposed to go over there and dominate, and they will, trust me. And it's going to be the same thing on the women's side of the court. We will go over there, we will dominate, we will win the gold medal, yet act like we've done it before. Act like you are the professionals that everybody else in the world is chasing. That's one thing that I really hope this team doesn't lose sight with. The one problem I see with that is outside of Carmelo, I don't know that there's really a vocal leader on this team. In years past, you had LeBron James. You had Kobe Bryant. You've had, you know, we can go back to 92. Look, you had basically 10 out of the 12 guys on the team were team leaders. So I wonder if maybe we're missing a little bit of leadership from a player's perspective. I'm not taking a shot at Kevin Durant, but look, leaders don't act the way like Kevin Durant did in an international game when you're up by 50 points. So I'm hoping that we conduct ourselves in a manner that is – at least pleasing and respectable, not only to the game of basketball, but to the previous Olympic teams that we have had that have won gold medals, because that's the expectation. And with expectation comes the idea of winning like you've done it before.
All right, so devil's advocate position, a quick turn, you know, since I used to do these a little bit more often. I totally understand where you're coming from and agree 1,000%, although I do have a feeling that when the real game starts, those guys will be locked in and ready to go. As you mentioned, they're pros. They've been around the game, so I would expect that, you know, some of that behavior to be cleaned up. But what if somebody were to throw out you, hey, what about Charles Barkley elbowing dudes, at, you know, like and you know, Sean Kemp like swinging on the rim, literally holding his Draymonds? You know, like all I'm saying is, while you want to represent your country with pride, you want to show dignity. This isn't the first time that guys have acted immaturely or done things that would be deemed inappropriate, you know, on the Olympic team.
It's not. I can, you know, in comparison to Barkley throwing an elbow, that's the way Charles Barkley played. Like he played the game that was why he was, you know, as far as his tenacity goes in the game. To me, that's a little bit different than trying to do a 360 dunk over the top of somebody or running up and down the sideline acting like an idiot when you knock down a three-point shot. Completely different. As far as Sean Kemp, look, that's a similar situation. All I'm saying is you're supposed to win the gold medal. You don't need to rub it into other countries' faces that you're up by 50 points. I hope that we have a level of class when we go out there and we win the gold medal here in the coming weeks, because it will happen. There's maybe one or two countries out there that can legitimately even form a challenge to this USA basketball team. And when the game is on a national level, please represent the game the right way.
I feel you. And like I said, I think they will. I think when the real games start, you know, guys, you know, like I said, they'll lock in, they'll be ready to go. You know, hopefully you don't see any type of silliness out there. But you know, at the same time, I'm also not going to kill the guys. Like, you know, if you're, especially if it's like a celebration type thing, you know, hey, look, you know, guys celebrate, you know, I guess to however they see fit. You certainly don't want to rub it in on a national or on a global, you know, scale. But, you know, hey, if you're up 50 points, I'm sorry. If you want a 360 on somebody, go ahead and do it. if you don't want me to 360 on you, just like if Frank Vice or whatever that dude's name, Frederick Vice, if he didn't want Vince Carter to jump over him, well, maybe he should have done something about it. But the point is taken. I do totally hear you. And I do hope that those guys, you know, represent the country and represent to the fullest, as well as, you know, the guys and the ladies. I do hope to see them victorious and bring back the gold for the United States. All right, absolutely fantastic show, guys. Great stuff. Always good to catch up with each of you. We appreciate Randy Cruz for his contribution this week, once again, of the Cruise Control podcast. We definitely recommend his content, so, you know, look to follow him on Twitter, you know, for all of his great updates. But for each of these fine gentlemen, Jameson Welsh and Jordan Buscarini, I am Jabari Davis, and this has been another episode of your Triple Threat Podcast.